This is ArcGIS Extensions, tools for improving data and map production. My name is Sean Granada. This is my co-presenter, Amber Bethel. We're product engineers on the production mapping team. So today we wanted to talk to you about standardization. Now, what happens if you have multiple cartographers and editors in your organization that do not have any defined business rules or standards for how they're producing maps and data? Well, a lot of times you get inconsistent results, you get inefficiencies within your data line production. Now, what we want to do today is tell you how to standardize those business rules utilizing the ArcGIS platform. So we're going to talk about four different categories today and how you can standardize and define those business rules and ultimately automate these processes. For workflows, we have ArcGIS Workflow Manager. Workflow Manager helps you create these steps that you must follow in your workflow. Next, we'll talk about how to improve the quality of your data using ArcGIS Data Reviewer. And finally, we'll talk about how Esri Production Mapping can help you standardize and make your workflows more efficient for editing and cartography. So first off, we'll talk about managing production work. Now, what is a workflow? A workflow is simply a set of steps that you must complete sequentially in order to consider that piece of work to be complete. Now, this is, of course, standard across all industries, and I'm sure this is your definition as well. So what is ArcGIS Workflow Manager? Well, Workflow Manager helps you create and configure these steps, and it helps you maintain operational efficiency by standardizing these steps so everyone follows the same process each time. We want to make sure that the right work is completed the right way by the right people. Now, once we have these steps configured, we can then execute them. And whoever is managing this production work can efficiently manage this work. Now, they can assign work out to the appropriate parties. They can assign it out by location of interest. And it allows the manager to oversee the workload balance and ensure that everything's going along efficiently. And afterwards, the organization can then evaluate and find any sort of inefficiencies within their workflow and improve them. After that, it goes into a cycle, and you can reconfigure, create more steps to improve your work. And of course, everything must be held in a centralized location. So all these workflows and so forth are held in a centralized database that your entire group can access. So just a little example here. We have what's called macro and micro workflows. Workflow Manager allows you to handle the macro workflow, which is your start to finish, your start beginning to end workflow. So for example, let's say you have a workflow to add a new customer to your, let's say, cable company. You'll receive a call in for new work. Then you'll dispatch the technician to the location. And then, of course, you'll need to update the GIS data afterwards to add in that customer. Now, for the micro workflow, we have what's called tasks in ArcGIS Pro. If you currently work with ArcMap, then we have what's called Task Assistant Manager, which operates in a very similar way. Either using Task or Task Assistant Manager, you can set out a set of steps within ArcMap. For example, this technician needs to start editing, select the correct template, and then ultimately select the correct tool and create this feature. Now, this can be done in a step-by-step manner so that whoever these technicians are that are adding this in can do it in a very consistent manner every single time. Now, Workflow Manager Server allows you to expose all these capabilities to your organization. It does that through web services, so you can access the information from different JavaScript applications. You can access it for maybe non-GIS users. It just makes it very accessible to everyone that's involved in this process. So I'm going to turn it over to Amber now, and she's going to show you a little bit about Workflow Manager.
All right. Thank you, Sean. So for today's demonstrations, I'm going to be playing various roles within a topographic mapping agency And the scenario that we're dealing with is that, fictitiously, of course, we have just been made aware of a landslide outside of Salt Lake City, Utah, in a region called Lone Rock. And it is going to be our job to make sure that we have great topographic data to respond to this event. So I'm using Workflow Manager, and I'm playing the role of a technical lead or a production manager within my organization, and it's my job to make sure we've got somebody on top of the data in this area right now. What I'm looking at right here is a list of all of the work that we've done in our organization. I can quickly filter that out to see what we're currently doing within our organization and who that work is assigned to. And I can see that there's actually no work going on in this area where our event is happening, but I can very quickly and easily see who has work assigned to them so I can know the right person to task out this new unit of work to. So in this case, I can see that Sean has 9 units of work. Maybe it's not best to give him the work, and maybe I'll assign it to myself instead. So I can create a new unit of work very easily by clicking this Create New Job button. Using this Create New Job button, I can see that there's lots of different type of work that we can do within our organization, and I'm going to choose this type to do topographic vector data production. Now, I can assign that out to an individual, so in this case, I'll assign it to myself, and you can see by default, we've got start and due dates that are auto-populated. The start date is automatically set to today, and we have this set up in a traditional sense. We would expect it to take a month to do this data collection. We really don't have time to wait that long if we really are in the midst of a crisis. So I'm going to say it's due today. I'm going to say that the priority of this thing is critical, and we can add in additional notes to landslide. Once I click Create Job, this is now a unit of work within our system. It has all of those various properties, and then I can also sketch in where this unit of work is going to be geographically located. So this is where our incident has happened that we need to respond to. So now this unit of work is in the system. Now it's the technician's job to do something about it. If I toggle over as the technician, I would have received an email just like this. My email isn't turned on right now, but I would receive an email just like this letting me know immediately as soon as that work was assigned to me that I have work that needs to be done. And so once I get this email, maybe I'm already in ArcMap doing my work. I can very easily find the current work that's assigned to me while I'm within ArcMap and take action and say I'm going to start up this unit of work that was just created to respond to this event. So I can activate that unit of work, and what we'll see automatically is that there is a workflow associated to it, a series of steps that we need to execute from start to end. There are also associated properties. So all of that information about start dates and due dates, all of that information is centrally contained in a system, and I can access it from the web or from ArcMap or from Pro. But really, the important thing is now that this work is assigned to me, I need to start doing something. So again, this workflow is laid out for me, and all I have to do to begin executing it is click the Run button. So it's going to go through a series of steps. It's going to check to make sure that the area of interest is defined. I'm going to be working in SDE, so it's created a version for me. It's set up things for quality control automatically behind the scenes. And now it's reached a point where it's asking me a question. How do I want to do my work? Do I want to edit a job version, or do I want to create a checkout replica? In this case, I'm going to choose job version because it's quicker to get through this response that way. And now I've reached a step that says edit data. When I click run, it's going to automatically set up my environment for me. It's going to load in the data that I need to work with. It's going to point it to the version that's associated to this job that I just created. It's going to zoom me to my area of interest. If I did have one of those micro-level workflows that Sean was describing, it would load that up automatically for me. So very quickly, here I am. I'm ready to go doing my edits. Everything is set up for me within my ArcMap environment. And as I would go through this workflow, I would just continue to work through each of these steps, and Workflow Manager will take care of guiding me through what I need to do every step of the way. So this is a very quick picture of Workflow Manager. Do you have any questions before we move on? Yes. Right, so that is not the email that I just, I'm not on the Esri network, so my email client isn't sending. So that's a sample email, not the actual real email. I apologize if there was confusion there. Yes?
Is the job workflow created with
model builder? So the question is, how are these workflows created? Are they model builder workflows? And the answer is no. Workflow Manager itself has a designer that allows you to author these workflows, and the different steps that happen in here, things like creating versions, things like launching ArcMap, are certain types of steps. And one of the types of steps is a geoprocessing step that can run a model. So a model can be part of this overall workflow, but it isn't the entirety of the workflow. In the back there?
Can a user step back if they need to redo a step because they don't, if they didn't complete the step they thought they did, can they go back out to the workflow?
Okay, so the question is, can I go back in the workflow? The answer is yes, with a few caveats. You can control who has the permissions to go back in the workflow. So when I set up a user, I can say what they can do in the application. If I give them the permission, they can right-click on one of these steps and say set as current, which takes me back to that step in the workflow. So you can control who can go back and who can't. So there's a question, is there a front end that an external user could use? We do have a number of web applications, and the first thing that I was showing you is one of our sample web applications, and this could be slightly reconfigured to simplify it for someone external just to log onto that website and say, there's something happening in this location, and that could trigger a workflow. Right. So the question is, at the completion of the workflow, are there other notifications that are sent potentially to the manager? The answer is yes. And in fact, you can configure almost any step in the workflow to send an email to whoever the appropriate party is. So there's all kinds of ways to trigger notifications as you're executing the workflow. In the back again. Okay, so the question is, this is an add-on, it is an extension product, is there a pro version as well? If you do purchase Workflow Manager Desktop, the capabilities are available in ArcMap and in Pro. The license that you get for ArcMap is also the same license that you would use in Pro. So purchasing Desktop gives you access to Workflow Manager in both ArcMap and Pro. Okay. I think now is a good time to start transitioning back and move on to another topic.
All right. Thanks, Amber. So next we want to talk about how you can improve the quality of your data. So what is quality? Well, it's a number of things. Maybe it's spatial accuracy, thematic accuracy, temporal quality, and that's just a short list. There's many more. Now, how do we improve the quality of our data? Well, we offer ArcGIS Data Reviewer, and this provides us a way to basically standardize our QA/QC workflow. We have a way to validate using automation and also manual tools. Then we have the review process, summarization, and then the cycle continues. So, ArcGIS Data Reviewer provides rule-based validation, which means that you can configure certain checks that you need. And there's also interactive tools. If you need to manually scan your data, there's tools that help you do that. And of course, there's a way to track any sort of errors that are found automatically or by the human eye. Now, of course, this helps save time and money by automating this work. There's also less rework later on if you do this when you receive data, during your process, and at the end. Now, the checks can be, they're very configurable, so it doesn't really matter what industry or domain you're in, there's checks for you. So how do we automate this data validation? Well, there's 42 checks currently in Data Reviewer. They span anything from attribution checks to spatial checks, metadata, and you can also create your own custom check. So maybe some of these don't provide what you need exactly. You can modify, create your own, and then implement them within Data Reviewer. So how do we do this? So maybe you're subject matter experts or there's some sort of industry standard there guiding your organization and guiding those requirements for what you consider high quality. Once we define those quality requirements, we can configure those checks to meet those requirements. Now, those checks are saved in what's called a reviewer batch job, and that reviewer batch job can be executed many, many times over and over again and be disseminated throughout your organization. So the quality control lifecycle that Data Reviewer really helps you with is, first of all, the review process. That includes both these automated checks and also the manual review if your organization requires it. After that, it allows you to track the corrections. Who is correcting this? Maybe a QA technician goes in, checks the errors, makes their fixes. And you also have the option to have another technician verify those changes. This is optional, of course. But all of this is stored within the Data Reviewer table. So the Data Reviewer table tracks all kinds of information. What error was found, why it was found, when, by who is it that corrected it, when, and so forth. Now, I'd like to reiterate that this can be done by either a small or a large organization. It doesn't really matter. I know this sounds like a lot of people involved in here, but it could be 1 to 2 people doing this process as well. So ArcGIS Data Reviewer for Server. This allows us to do something similar as Workflow Manager for Server. It allows you to expose a lot of this capability through web applications, through web services, and it just makes it easy to expose it throughout your organization, through all of your departments. And you can also automate through this web interface. So you can schedule checks to run, maybe on a nightly basis, weekly, or whenever it is. So utilizing server and utilizing these web apps, it's easy to share it across the entire ArcGIS system. It allows better communication by allowing every single department, your executives, non-GIS users to see the quality of your data. And it's just a good way to communicate that quality to everyone that's involved in your data and map production process. So I'm going to turn it back to Amber now, and she's going to show you Data Reviewer.
All right. Thank you, Sean. So we're still working in the same area near Lone Rock where there's this landslide event. Now, I want to make sure that this data that we have, that we've collected, is the best data possible. As Sean described, there are a number of different checks that can be configured to automatically validate my data. Everything from attribution validation to checking for geometric relationships. And when I configure these, a number of these that I want to be able to reuse, they're stored in what we call a batch job. And I can execute a batch job very easily in ArcMap or Pro by simply navigating to where it is on my machine. And it's sort of hidden away there. And when I choose that, it's going to load in all of the checks that are associated in that batch job. And this pane should have filled out already by now. And it just hid behind ArcMap. There we go. Yay. Here's all of my checks that have been pre-configured. And we're looking for everything from disconnections in my road network to overlapping buildings to making sure that certain attributes that are critical, maybe for symbology or for analysis, are populated the way they need to be. When I load my batch job and I'm running it in ArcMap, I do have a number of options of which features I want to validate. I can validate a selection set, all of the features in my current extent, all the features that meet definition queries or everything in my database. And when I am validating an SDE geodatabase, if I've made a bunch of edits, I can validate only those features that I've changed. In this case, I'm going to run it on everything in the current extent and click the Run button. When I click this button, it's going to figure out what features are in my extent and then begin to execute each of these rules to find if any of them violate those rules. Now again, this batch job can be run in ArcMap, but it can be also run a number of different ways. You can see there's an execute data reviewer batch job step in my workflow. If I close ArcMap and run this step in Workflow Manager, it can automatically validate the features in my job extent. Sean mentioned that we can run it through Server. We can also run these exact same checks in Pro. So there's a number of different ways, no matter what part of the platform I'm using, that I can validate these. And in this case, it found 11 records, 11 potential issues with my data very quickly. Now, if I open up my reviewer table, this is where all the information about my issues is stored. I can see that it stores various information. It stores a status. So all of these issues, we've just found them, so they're in a review state. As we begin to fix these, we'll move them into correction and verification states. We can see what feature class, subtype, and object ID of the feature has the issue, and we can see information in the check title and notes and description that tell me what the issue is. We can see the severity or impact of the issue, who found it, and again, as we go through various phases, we'll see additional information populated. Now, in this case, I only have 11 issues, but it's still kind of hard to get a feel for what types of problems I've found. I can take any of these columns and drag it up to the top and very quickly get summaries and begin to organize my records. So I can see that there are 4 dangles or disconnections in my road network and 7 attribute issues with my structure points. If I double click on any of these, it will select the feature that has the problem, and very quickly you should have seen it flash where the issue is. In this case, it's a point that's disconnected, so it doesn't do a good job zooming in. But if I zoom in and double click this again, you can see that there's a flash where the disconnect is, and we can see that this road really is disconnected from the other one. So if I start an edit session, I can begin to fix these issues that we've identified. In this case, I'll just do a very simple edit and just move the invertex until it snaps. Once I've done any of my edits and corrections to my issues, I can then right-click to let everybody know and choose Enter Correction Status, and this lets everybody know that the issue has been addressed. In this form, it gives me a couple of options. I'll say that I've fixed the issue, I've resolved it per guidance, or I can add in additional notes here. Now, one of the things Sean mentioned is that this set of tools can be used by a large organization or a smaller organization. If you're in a larger organization, you will typically have somebody independently verify that all of these fixes were done correctly and didn't introduce any new issues. If you are in a larger organization, you may want to uncheck the automatically verify so that this doesn't automatically move to verification status. I'm going to leave it checked on, and really what that does now is it turns the status to green, it's acceptable, it's been fixed, and you'll see that it's auto-populated both correction fields and verification fields to let everybody know when this was fixed and by whom. So Data Reviewer allows us very easily to identify automatically issues and then work them through the life cycle. But Sean also mentioned that we have a server application. The server application allows us to bring other people into this quality of our data conversation, if you will. If I have somebody using my data in a web application, and this is just a simple web app builder application that I brought up, I've loaded in my data to that web app, and maybe somebody is using it and they notice an issue, like this entire subdivision is not in my data. I don't have any roads in that area. I can add a widget to any web app builder application that allows them to tell us, well, let's say they're going to tell us that there's roads that are missing, and they can simply just mark up that there's a series of roads missing, and this immediately gets reported to our central reviewer database. So very easily, we can bring other people who don't have ArcMap or Pro into the ability to let us know where there's issues with our data. And from a management point of view, I could spin up operations dashboards that have widgets that bring in information about the quality of my data. So I can see information about the types of issues that are most prevalent in my data, the feature classes that have the most issues, what the status of all of my issues are. I can come in and right-click on any of these and select where those issues are, zoom to them, and even click on them to find out the specifics of any of these issues. So using web, using Operations Dashboard and Data Reviewer Server, we can bring this information into the hands of those who need to make decisions and understand the quality of our data. So there's all kinds of different ways that we can find issues with our data, but also understand the quality of the data within our organization. Before I hand it back to Sean, are there any questions on Data Reviewer?
Does the data have to be turned on or enabled display prior to reviewing it? Or can it review on the layers that are turned off as it's loaded on the
end? So the question was, and I assume this is in relation to ArcMap. Yeah. So the question was, when I'm validating data in ArcMap, does it run on all of the layers? Do the layers have to be turned on in the table of contents? And in all honesty, I can't remember, which is why I'm doing this. Cancel. So it's turning settlement points off. And so if you click validate before you run, it'll put a red exclamation mark next to the checks that it won't run. In this case, it says settlement points, and I can't remember if that's because I don't have it loaded. And I don't have it loaded. But if I turn off that, sorry. Cancel. So yes, my transportation ground curves were turned off, but they are in the table of contents, and it didn't put an exclamation mark. So it should run on all the layers that are in your table of contents, regardless of if they're visible or not. Sorry, I didn't know the answer off the top of my head, so I thought I'd check. Yes. That is correct. So the question was, she's got an eagle eye. She noticed that I didn't stop my edit session, but I did mark this as acceptable. So if something went wrong and ArcMap crashed, which never happens, of course, never, what happens to this record that I said was acceptable? The answer is the record does not change. Once I physically change the status of it, it doesn't know that the edit was rolled back. So yes, there isn't a necessarily immediate direct connection. So you do want to be smart about when you save edits and when you mark things as resolved. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes.
I can kind of see what the workflow is where you've got, error got identified. What if you're working in an SDE version environment and after that verification, you need to check that somebody's gone ahead and pushed that up to your next version?
So the question was, if you go through the status of reviewed, corrected, and accepted on a version, is there an easy way to know if that change got pushed into the parent version, and is that part of the overall status? And the answer is not really, but you can think about how you want to do your workflow. You could say that I can put, if a record is corrected, I can push it into my parent and we'll verify it in the parent version. We have the three steps. I've never actually heard somebody ask for a fourth step, But it's a very interesting question.
We've had significant trouble with editing errors causing build problems, and then we can't route our school buses.
So right.
We have to be very careful before we let those edits get pushed out to our production
version. Right. Yeah, let me. I might come up with some other ideas, but that is a very interesting question. But yeah, out of the box, there really is just those three phases. In the back.
How did you create the initial batch file to set up all these steps that you wanted to do?
Very quickly. There are all of these different checks. So when I determine a type of problem that I want to identify, each of these checks has various parameters that I fill out. This first button here allows me to come in and add in any of those checks, point to the feature classes that I want, and then identify what the issue is, and then all of those get stored in this file that I save. Now, if you want more detail than that, we can have a sidebar on that. I think it's time to pass it back to Sean.
Alrighty. Thanks, Amber. So now we're going to talk about creating and maintaining quality data. Now, this process is very commonplace amongst all your organizations, most likely. Feature collection, for example, you need a way to produce maps and ultimately to share it. You need a way to manage this entire process. Now, how we do that is through standardization. Standardization leads to repeatability and ultimately automation. And we need a way to centrally control all of these different things. So Esri Production Mapping helps us do this. It helps us define our editing rules for data production and feature collection. It also allows us to utilize Data Reviewer in our feature collection. And also at the end, when we do need to do cartographic finishing, we need to have business rules to guide the symbology, the layout rules, and so forth. And we can throw all this into a workflow and utilize it in, let's say, Workflow Manager, for example. And we can utilize these standards within ArcMap as we're going through our process. So seamless data collection is a common problem. You have many different editors collecting data. Maybe you have contractors around the world collecting data in different regions and so forth. How do we make sure that the data that they're collecting is consistent? It's utilizing the same standards. For example, we have to collect some roads here. And we need to identify what is a main road versus a local road, for example. Well, how do we know that? We have to define maybe a main street has so many lanes, it has a median, maybe it has a certain width. So these are things we have to define in our collection spec. But once we have that, we can then accurately and consistently collect this data according to our business specifications. Now, production mapping also allows you to configure your display. Now, our editing environment is called Feature Manager. Now, within Feature Manager, it looks sort of similar to the attribute and templates panes that you're probably familiar with. But in this case, we can take the attribution. For example, we have 6 different fields. We can reorder them, hide them. We can also change the visibility, make them bold. We can group them. For example, maybe 1 and 3 are in a group called mandatory. And then 5, 6, and 2 in that order of importance are in maybe a group called optional, for example. It's just a way to easily organize your fields so it makes it much easier to collect data. So in our reviewer batch jobs, we can configure attribution checks. Now these attribution checks can be utilized within Feature Manager in what we call on-the-fly validation. So maybe number 3 needs to be populated. If it's left null, then it's an invalid feature and it's incorrect. When the technician goes to save this feature out, when it's null, that technician will get a pop-up that says this must be populated, for example. So this is configured in the batch job, this message, and it will not allow them to apply that change or create that feature and apply to the database. So this helps prevent rework later. It helps prevent human error. And similar to how domains and feature subtypes kind of restrict certain attribution. Now, these standards can be centralized in what we call product library. It sort of is a document system that you can hold these standards in. Now, you can centrally put this into SDE, for example. Everyone in your organization can connect to it and utilize these rules. So, Amber's going to show you a little bit about editing in production mapping.
All right. Thank you, Sean. So in our last demonstration, someone came in and indicated that there was a missing subdivision in this area through a web client. Again, using ArcMap and Data Reviewer, we can very easily know where that issue is and double-click on it. And that area happens to fall within our extent that we're interested in for our work, because this is in the foothills of where our landslide event is occurring. And I had turned off my roads, so I need to turn those back on. So this, I can visualize where that is, and I actually need to add imagery. Totally forgot that bit. Yeah, it's not in there. Sorry, got to turn on my imagery. All right, so now that we've identified where there's an area that we need to collect features, we have this new subdivision. Again, I'm going to focus on collecting my roads because it's going to be very important in one of these situations to make sure that we can route people to these locations to make sure this area has been evacuated. So to focus on my roads, I'm going to come to my feature manager. I'm going to go ahead and collapse all those and find my transportation. So by default, all of your feature templates are built based on your symbology. And in this case, we have one symbol for all of our roads in our map, which means we have one feature template for all of our roads in our map. Now, there are a lot of attributes indicated in bold that I really need to fill out if I'm going to collect one of these roads. I can begin to choose some of these values. Let's see here. This is going to be asphalt. As I begin to fill these out, if I want to check that I've populated all the attributes I need to, that I populated them correctly, I can always click the apply button. And in this case, it's showing me a lot of different fields that need to be populated, right? I need to populate the number of lanes, the type of road. It's also giving me a warning saying that I should populate the name of the road. And in this case, I may not know what that name is. So any of these errors I absolutely must fix. Any of the warnings I have the option to choose to ignore. Now, if I wanted to, I can have a standard set of templates that I can load into any map document. And one of the things that we can store in our product library are these feature templates. In this case, I'm going to choose to load in just my feature templates for my roads. And click OK. And we can see that there's a number of them in there. Once I've loaded them in my standard set of templates, I can now choose one of these instead of just having the single choice. So now I've got a lot of different types of roads to choose from. So maybe I'm going to choose two lanes with no median. Now, in this case, all of the attributes that are absolutely mandatory are already pre-populated. And I know this because when I bring in those templates, if there was something wrong with it, it would show up with a little X mark next to it. So I know that this set of templates is good to go. Again, the name isn't populated, but that's an optional parameter. So now I'm ready to start collecting each of these roads. And I can choose any of my standard construction tools, but there is also another one called Create and Intersect Features that's available in production mapping that allows me to come in, and as I'm sketching each of these roads, anytime I cross an existing road, very poor job collecting these features, but anytime there we go, let's finish my sketch there. Anytime these features cross another feature or touch another feature, the lines are automatically going to be split. So maybe in our specification, we do need to make sure those roads are split so we know that we can navigate people down different paths. All right, so we've come in and we've very quickly and easily identified what attribution is important. We've loaded in a standard set of templates and we've sketched out the features that are necessary. And as we went along, again, our validation was firing off, letting us know when our attribution was incorrect. And those are really the key highlights of the editing tools in production mapping. Are there any questions before we move on? Okay, back to Sean.
Okay, great. Thanks, Amber. Let's move on to the cartographic side of production mapping now. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how we can create and manage specification-driven maps. So traditionally, just like editing, you have this issue when you have many different cartographers, many different opinions, for example, on symbology. And ultimately, you're going to create many different types of map, and it's going to be inconsistent across the board. So we can follow this cartographic workflow with production mapping. Of course, you have your cartographic data giving your GIS data context. Then you'll have your symbology. Maybe you need to make cartographic edits to your representations at that point. You need to define your layout rules, margins, page sizes, where the map elements go, and so forth. Then ultimately, you'll get to your output. Now, we need to be able to do this consistently and in large numbers for many of our organizations and make sure that it's not only consistent, but of high quality. So I'll start off with symbology. We have what's called visual specifications. Now, visual specifications let you standardize the labeling and symbology. Now, this links the representations, the symbols and the labels to your feature classes and the attribution within your feature classes. This will help you maintain your maps because when the attribution changes, the rep rules will be updated using visual specifications since it's now data-driven. You can manage many layers by batch processing through visual specifications as well. So you'll see out there we have a set of rules that this particular map or set of maps or map book must follow. And these can be stored in a centralized database as well. For cartographic edits, we have tools to hide, shift, mask features. We have tools to manually update some of these things. We have what's called a layer snapshot, for example, that lets you identify the differences between the different editions of your maps. And then you can utilize the tools to maybe remove some of the representation, shift, do some conflict resolution, and so forth. We also have a layout editor. Now, within this, we can do several different things. We have what's called a graphic table element. Now, this is a dynamic table, glossary, legend, what have you. And this is also data-driven. So as you're panning and zooming or navigating around your map, perhaps the attribution is changing, the table and glossaries will update as you go. Or if you're flipping through your map book, you can lay down your table once, and every time you change the page, it will update according to the map that you have displayed. Now, this can be done either in data-driven pages or just your standard map documents that you have now if you do not utilize data-driven pages. We also have a layout editor. Now, through this, you can manage and standardize and automate the placement of your map elements. And you can also define relative placement in relation to like page layout and establish rules to adjust page sizes, orientation, and margin distances, for example. Now, this can be saved out into a file, and this can be shared out through throughout your organization to all your cartographers so they can utilize these rules. There's also a way to create grids and graticules for our Grids and Graticules Designer. Again, these grids and graticules can be customized, saved out to a file, and shared. And at the end, I mentioned product library before. but you can centralize all of your map sheets in this product library. So anyone in your organization can access this, identify what area they want. Maybe they want a hard copy map of some area. And they can then go to this product library, find it, and easily export it and print it from there. We also have a server product and production mapping. Now, this product is a self-service mapping application. It's run in your browser. It's a JavaScript application. Now, this allows anyone to access the high-end content that your organization is producing. So they can select maybe a certain quadrangle or what have you, and export that data using those rules that you had built. So all those cartographic rules that you had built in the desktop application will build these maps on the fly using those rules. So I'm going to turn back to Amber to show you a little bit about production mapping, cartography, and server.
All right, thank you. So I'm going to start in desktop. Again, the scenario that we've been working off of is that there's a landslide in this area near Lone Rock, Utah. In order to produce a map, I have already gone through the process of collecting all the data, but there are still a number of different things that I need to do to produce a standard map. Now, this is a layout that we have for producing a standard 25K map. So I can see that there's data in it. I can see that there's a number of different elements. Some of these elements, like adjoining sheet guides and north arrows and scale bars even, potentially can change with every map that I need to produce. So I need to make sure that I can systematically produce these maps in exactly the same way, regardless of where I'm located. Now, first off, we'll notice that as I look at some of this, there's a couple of bright red features showing up, and that's that new subdivision, those new roads that I just collected. They don't have the same standard symbology as all of the other features that I have in my road feature class. So the subdivision should be right around there, and we can see that those features are not correctly symbolized. What we build within production mapping typically for symbology is a series of rules that we call visual specifications that allow us to define a very specific set of criteria and attributes that must exist on a feature. And when those attributes exist on a feature, we define what symbol should be applied. So we can build a very complex set of rules to determine how features should be symbolized, and then simply using a geoprocessing tool, choose my specification, my set of rules for how these features should appear, and just run it on my data at any point in time, and it makes sure that the correct representation symbols are put on all of my features in that feature class. So in this case, all right, I found 335 road features that needed to have their symbols updated, and hopefully if I click the refresh button, I did something wrong, clearly. In theory, that symbol should have been updated, and for some reason it wasn't. But ignoring that, in theory, that should automatically calculate the correct symbols for each of my features in that feature class, and I don't have time to figure out what went wrong. But then additionally, you can see that I was just in data view. When I come back to layout view, everything's a little out of whack. It's not right the right scale. It's not the right location. One of the things that we build within production mapping are called grids and graticules. And these are really a complex set of grids, or they can actually be very simple as well. But these grids allow us to define what types of grid lines and surround information should appear on my grid. And it also allows me to store a lot of other information. So I'm going to generate a grid really quickly here using this layout. Now, there is a geoprocessing tool to do it as well. But I can generate a grid, and that grid is going to store all of this information, but it also stores other information. And if I click this button called Grid Layout View, it tells me that in my grid, I've defined things like my spatial reference, my scale, my extent, my rotation angle, the size and of my data frame, and all of this information is centrally stored in that document. So when I click the OK button, it can automatically set my data frame to have the right scale, extent, projection. So all with a grid and graticules XML, which again, we can apply using geoprocessing, but that information is really powerful for helping me make sure that my layout and the data displayed in my layout is exactly the data that I need. Now, I can build my map in ArcMap, but if I've built these configurations with my symbology and with my grids, why should I even have to be in ArcMap to build a map? Why can't somebody just go to a website and request the map that they want and automatically get what they need? So let's search for Lone Rock, Utah. If I choose a 25K product as the type of output that I want, and I choose a PDF as the output, I can zoom into that area, and I can see all of the standard maps that my organization produces. These gray squares represent those standard extents. And we can find that Lone Rock, Utah actually falls pretty much right on the boundary between two of our map sheets. So if somebody needs to take one of our 25K maps into the field, traditionally we would print two maps for them, one with both of these standard extents. But using these configuration files that we've built in ArcMap and using our web application here, I can simply choose a location where I want my map to be centered. And it will dynamically calculate an extent that is essentially the same as any of these standard extents. We're just locating it where we want it. In this web application, we can see print previews, so we can see what geographic area is going to be covered by this map. And this is a very quick and dirty, none of the surround elements have been updated, but it allows us to see what we're going to get if we choose to export the full map. In this case, this is the extent that I want. It is centered in the area that I want it to be, and I can give this a unique name, Lone Rock, and choose the Export Products button. So this will now take all of those configurations, my symbology, my grids, my layout, some other functionality, all wrapped up in a geoprocessing service and produce a PDF automatically for me that meets my cartographic specifications. So all of this can happen on the fly. When somebody needs it, they can come to a website and request a map that meets your specifications. Now this does take just about a minute to export, so I've got 30 seconds to show off some of the other capabilities. If somebody wants not just to have a standard map, there are other types of maps that you can design in this application. So if I want to produce a map book that follows a trail through this area, I can choose, let's say we're gonna create a map at 5,000, one to 5,000 as my scale, and I'm gonna produce a multi-page PDF. I can sketch a line and get a map book through this particular area, and of course, things keep popping up. Anyway, it will automatically calculate how many sheets it needs to produce that map book at that scale and align them accordingly, right? So there's all kinds of different ways that you can use this web application to get the maps that you need. Now, the map has been exported, so I'm gonna open this up in a new window, and we can see that this PDF was created with the text that I gave it for the title, but it's zoomed my data, grabbed my latest vector data, zoomed it to that area, generated this grid, projected my data frame, gone through and updated all of my surround elements, like my adjoining sheet map, like my declination north arrow, and all of this happened automatically on the fly through a production mapping server. So there are lots of ways that we can author configuration files to make standard map products, and then, again, using our web client, we can generate these maps on the fly automatically using production mapping. Questions? We'll start over there.
We enable end users to turn layers on and off before they generate these maps?
So the question is, can users turn layers on and off before they generate these maps? So the answer to that, as far as I know, is no. But in your standard map template, If I had opened this up actually in Adobe, you can generate your PDF in such a way that they can turn the layers off before they print. You would choose the standard layers that you would want visible, or you could have multiple products that have certain layers visible. But there's nothing dynamic through the user interface at this point. Potentially, you could do it through some customization, though. Okay.
Then turn on the bits they want before they generate a map.
Cool.
I got one other question, because we've done this with data-driven pages. Our schools face all different directions. We've got little elementaries, big high schools. We've set up data-driven frames to do floor plan maps of each school. They're not the same scale, and they're not at the same declination against Drew North. Is there a way to leverage, instead of regular grids, like the frames we set up with DataDriver through the production mapping, where they could say, give me Bullock Elementary and get the specified angle and scale I've got for Bullock. Give me Garland High School, get the scale and extent that I've got for Garland High School on a production mapping kind of thing.
So if you already have the predefined I don't know that I can really repeat the question, so hopefully you can follow along with the answer. This gentleman is already using data-driven pages and already has a number of extents predefined that say this is the location, the rotation angle, the scale, if you will. And he's wondering if you can use a web application like this to produce map sheets that take into account that. In the case where we're using in this case I've chosen fixed 25K, and you see that there's a series of polygons that just popped up. If I select this polygon to use as my area of interest, my web application can pull any information from that polygon that I want to use and apply it to the map as it's generated. So if you do already have those polygons saying that this is a facility and this is a facility, if they choose that facility, we can automatically use that information. Yes. Yes. So the question was, is there a way, instead of doing a fixed scale, to do a fixed page size? So in this application, when you're generating map, there's really three factors to take into account. The area that's covered on the ground, the scale, and the page size. We have three different calculators here that allow you to define two of those values, and it will automatically calculate the third, right? So if I know what my scale is and my page size, I can dynamically choose the area. If I know the page size is and I want to sketch a polygon, it can automatically determine the scale that's necessary to fit on the page. And then if I want to sketch a polygon and define a scale, then it will automatically choose the right page size. So all of these are dynamically built into the system, and you can choose which ones you want to use as you're allowing people to make their maps. Any other questions? Back in the back there. I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear you.
Can you preview the map before you export it?
Right, so can we preview the map? Once I choose a map that an extent, immediately what's going to happen, actually, I'm sorry, I can't deal with all the map extents. when I choose one of these map extents as a map, so you'll see that it begins to spin in the export queue. As soon as it's done spinning, there's a little hyperlink right here that will show up that will allow me to see a print preview. So you can see that the icon changed and there's a little tiny thumbnail, but I click on this and I get a bigger thumbnail, and this essentially is my print preview. So it's going to show me what data is going to be included. It's not going to update any of the surround elements, but it is going to show you the standard template. Does that work?
Drew the line there and generated analyze that line. For instance, if you were looking for a linear route, you wanted to define that on the page, is there a way to make that line? Because I realize that that was more, you know, a guideline of where you wanted to put your sheets, but could you make it a printable line?
So the question is, if I come in and I sketch a line that I want to build a series of maps along, can that line then be included in the prints that I'm making? And at this point, it's not there, but I could probably, behind the scenes, there's geoprocessing in Python, and I could probably do that in hours. Maybe even less, add that customization. The other thing that you can do is if it is a standard pipeline or a standard road, you can bring that layer in and select the feature, and then it's already in your map as well.
Well, I was thinking more in terms of if you had it in a route that you were looking to reroute, you were looking for different options for reroute, that similarly to the way people go in and sketch in Google Earth,
Right.
Then that would be
okay. Yeah. I will add that to our enhancement list, as well as the suggestion from the gentleman over there. Were there any other questions, or should we pass it back to Sean for some? There's one over there. Okay. Yes. So as you're generating any of these maps, if you use one of the standard north arrows, it will, and the data frame rotates, of course, it will dynamically update. What's included in production mapping is also a type of north arrow called, what do we call it? Called the topographic north arrow, and this is a dynamic element, and it will give you declination as well, and this automatically updates based on the center point of your map. So there are lots of ways that you can add in north arrows, and then based on how your map sheet is oriented, it will automatically calculate the correct declinations and angles. All right.
All right, so we've gone through Workflow Manager, Data Reviewer, and Production Mapping today. And basically, it's just showing you how you can be consistent and efficient within your organization. And of course, this is going to drive quality up and drive costs down as you become more and more efficient and improve your process. So that's what we had for you today. And I'd like to invite you to take our survey for this particular session. You can go into your Esri Events app if you have that on your smartphone. Search for ArcGIS extensions, tools for improving data map production. Scroll to the bottom of the session and there's a quick survey there. Also, we are down in the pavilion. We have several different booths down there. The production mapping group is kind of split into two parts. The geodata management area contains more of the editing focused portion of production mapping, and then mapping and visualization will have the cartographic portion. I know it's kind of late in the conference at this point, but there is one more session for ArcGIS Workflow Manager, and that is at 3:15 today, so toward the end of the day there. That's in room 16B if you want to see more about that. Some resources here. Basically, it's www.esri.com/the product name. And you can also view product on demand, which Amber just showed, at pod.arcgis.com. It's a sample application. It's exactly what she showed today, so you can play around with it if you want to. So, thank you very much for joining us today.